All right. Hi, everyone. Good to see you all. It's just about exactly 5 o'clock here in California. And so this is Thursday, October 5th, 2023. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and we're here for our first Thursday meditation. So thank you all for joining us. This is really a wonderful opportunity for us to gather virtually and in reality and share some time together for meditation for compassion for all living beings. So thank you, Lisa Wong, for helping out with letting people in and being our co-host. And welcome, everyone. It's good to see you. Yeah, this is great. So you're in Florida, I guess.
I got a new friend, Kelly, from New York.
From New York. Okay. Hi, Kelly.
Hi,
thanks for
everyone.
Joining us.
Yes.
Great.
Thank you, everyone.
Good, good. All right. So, and Susan in Daytree in Hawaii, looks like you have a guest joining us, too. So, wow, we have a whole crowd here in the background. Everybody's welcome. Everybody's welcome for this. This is our, we'll go ahead and start. People usually join a little bit late. We're starting slightly early, but I think, what the heck, it's good to do it. We're here. We can get started. And by the way, this is not the final, meditation Thursday, the first Thursday of the month before we go on our tour because, it's just squeaking in. I think it's, let's see. The first of November is a Thursday. The second. So we're leaving on the fourth, which is a Saturday. So we have one more time here at home with our piano, and then we'll be on the road for 5 months. So it's great that we can join this way. And actually, once we're on the road, it's a little even difficult to even have it. We will do our best to have it every month, but I can't necessarily guarantee it. All right, so is everyone ready? We can go ahead and start our time of meditation. Feel free to, I think it's good to have our mics muted, and you can have your camera however you want. You can have it off if you'd like or whatever. We're kind of going within here for a little while, and then we'll come back. And as you all know, this is only 1 hour maximum. And so, but we do have time for dialogue or any questions you may have afterwards. All right, so here we go. Before our time here of meditation, we were listening to some music from the album that's called Islands of Light, and that was a piece called Song of Inner Spaces. It goes like this. And the whole idea is to listen to the silence within the music. Because there's always silence within every sound. There's always space around every object. We're taught to ignore the silence and the space. In many ways, to be afraid of them. We try to fill up the silence, fill up all the space with our possessions. Let's enter the silence, the space between the notes. Abiding in peace, abiding in space, abiding in silence, abiding in joy, abiding in loving kindness, abiding in freedom. Abiding in compassion. Abiding in a sense of appreciation. For this physical vehicle that we have. Abiding in a sense of oneness and unity with the infinite source of our life and with the infinite manifestations of this source, all of our brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters who are human beings, the whole human family, our brothers and sisters who are what we call animals, dogs and cats and cows and pigs and chickens and gorillas and wolves. Dolphins and whales, giraffes and lions, sharks and groupers, and flies and mosquitoes. Spiders. Expressions of life are so precious. You can imagine if we were somewhere far out in the universe where there was no life and we suddenly saw a little fly. What great love we would have for that little being. Infinite perfection, or the little mouse. Infinite intelligence. Abiding in the silence. The space between the notes. The space between our thoughts. Where freedom lies in the space. In the silence. From the silence, we can go in any direction. There's no past or future, just this present moment. So we allow ourselves now to open to the infinite light that shines at the heart of the universe, the that shines in every cell of our being, bringing harmony and strength, perfection and creativity, fulfillment, and wisdom to every aspect of our being, to every aspect of our physical life, to this physical body and to all of our affairs, and to all of our relationships, knowing that every relationship we are in has a purpose, and the purpose is for the highest good of all. That we can always learn. We can always contribute, and even better, we can always unlearn. We can always let go. The greatest form of generosity is letting go. Perfection of what is right now, knowing that our aspiration for greater understanding and more compassion, to be a force for healing in the world, is part of the great perfection. The essence of the great perfection. May all beings be happy. May all beings awaken from the delusion of separateness. May all beings realize infinite brightness, their true nature, and awaken to the infinite interconnectedness of all expressions of life. And the silence that unites us all, each one of us, is a melody. Every melody has a beginning. Every melody has an ending. Every melody emerges out of silence. Returns again to silence. And even within the melody, there is the silence. We are the uncreated, the silence itself. Although we identify with this beautiful melody that we are for this lifetime, this unique and beautiful melody, we can also hear and understand the silence, the that makes the melody possible. Together, knowing that every breath is a new beginning. Every time we take a breath, we affirm life, we affirm joy, we affirm new possibilities, we affirm glorious present moment, beyond past and future, this moment. And so now we allow our heart to become brighter, radiantly bright, and we see now and feel our heart pulsing with a beautiful light, a beautiful radiant light, radiating in ever-expanding spheres of light into every cell of our being and beyond. We feel our heart beating rhythmically in harmony with the great universal heartbeat and the infinite intelligence that is the source of all life. Feel our heart getting warmer and radiating warmth and light to all living beings. May all beings bask in the light that shines always from our heart, all expressions of life. We feel our heart connected to the infinite loving heart that is the source of all life. We open our minds, open the doorways of understanding in our mind and in our heart, and we see from a higher perspective the journey that we are on for this lifetime, and the perfection of our journey, the guidance from our true nature, from all of our allies, from the higher powers, that we contribute our gifts for the benefit of all living beings, that we rise above any fear, any sense of lack or limitation. We allow our light to shine on all living beings, especially on ourselves. As we open the doorways, that open beyond all intellect, the limitations, the
cultural programming to the truth that is beauty, the great beauty of being, flowering in the infinite variety of forms and sounds. We give thanks for this infinite and amazing celebration of beauty on this earth and beyond, in all the realms. And we give thanks, knowing that we are here to be part of the solution, part of the healing, part of the awakening, part of the inspiration and the understanding of the one life streaming through all manifestations, bringing every manifestation of humanity out of the darkness of fear and ignorance, into the light of joy and kindness, for the benefit not only of all human beings, but for the benefit of all living beings. We see the factory farms disappearing, all animal exploitation evaporating, all human violence and delusion disappearing, the darkness, even for thousands of years, disappears in an instant when the light arrives. It's never even happened. It's a counterfeit. And now the true reality shines forth, and we see the whole earth bathed in the light of peace, joy and harmony and health, understanding. And we see our own heart radiating love for all living beings, compassion, benevolence, joy, and peace. This opportunity of the human birth, and this opportunity to be together here right now, to open the truth and the beauty that are our true nature, the silence. Thank you, everyone. I really
appreciate the opportunity to join together in our time of meditation on the first Thursday of every month. So thank you for taking time out of what I know are very busy and full schedules to be with us here in this auspicious time. It's a powerful time. I think we all know that. Big changes are happening. And that's why I think it's so gratifying to know that we can connect with the transpersonal dimension, the dimension of consciousness beyond our personality. And I love that word, person, you know, I mean, per means through, son means sound, as you all know probably, which the word persona means mask. So the whole idea, we have a personality, which in many ways is a mask for the true being that we are. And sometimes we forget and we think we're the mask. We think we're the physical body and the whole collection of memories and likes and dislikes that we have accumulated and that we either like or don't like. And we forget our true face. You know, in the Zen tradition, I should just mention this, I've been reading lately a book by Kusan Sunim, who was a great Zen master. I've talked about him a little bit now and then. He was the Zen master who was at Songwangsa, the Zen monastery where I was a monk in 1984. He died though in December of 83. I met him when he came to the United States, but he was a very great master, very enlightened being. And he really emphasized, like, all he ever talked about really was the importance of meditation. Meditation is the pathway out of delusion. But it's not just meditation, it's questioning. Questioning. Questioning, questioning, questioning. That was it. There's a saying in Zen, it goes, big questioning, big enlightenment. Small questioning, small enlightenment. No questioning, no enlightenment. And, you know, that word, questioning, to really question all of our assumptions, question what we think we are, and the stories we keep getting told by our society, that we are a certain race and age and gender and this and that and the other. But what is it that makes it possible? And so that in the Zen tradition, there's what's called a koan. It's a type of meditation practice based on going deeper with a question. And I think it's just a natural thing. It's no big deal, really. It's just that as human beings, we land here on this earth, and we start living our lives, we learn a language, we learn customs, and we have parents and relatives, and we go to school, and this whole thing happens, and like layer upon layer upon layer gets, you know, added and added and added. And underlying everything, you cannot escape it, is a question, like, what am I supposed to do here? What's the purpose? What's the purpose of my life? What am I? Who are you? What are others? What is life? What is love? Who knows the answers to those questions? You cannot ever make progress in those questions by getting a PhD at a university, for example. I mean, that'll probably take you far away from that. You know, so these existential, or perhaps a better word is teleological or ontological questions, the question of being is unavoidable. It's unavoidable. If we're being halfway honest with ourselves, we know we are living in a question. The problem is, of course, that in our society we're not comfortable with that. We are complacent. We'd rather not think about these disturbing questions of what the purpose of our life is, or why we're eating what we're eating, why we're eating flesh of other living beings. You know, these basic questions like why are we eating what we're eating? Why are we doing what we're doing? Well, we don't want to think about that. And we don't want any silence, because silence is the greatest threat, because when we're quiet, we might start asking questions. So we have to keep everything filled up. We have to have noise, we have to have music in the background all the time, and this is the great disease of a herding culture based on dominating animals and avoiding taking responsibility for the consequences of our actions for 10,000 years. And here it is ripening right before our very eyes, and how do we respond to that? That's the question. And so the question, the idea of, like I was saying in Zen, of a koan, the word is koan. Koan means public case. It's actually in Chinese, it's kong'an, and in Japanese, it's koan. But anyway, this kong'an, this question, it's a public question, it's a public case. And the main one is, the number one question is, what is this? You know, what am I? And to go deeper and deeper with that question. And one form of that question, though, which you may have heard of, one is, what is your fate? What is your original face before you were born? Or to make it really emphatic, they say, what is your original face before your parents were born? Right? That's a really good one. In other words, what is the being? What is your true face? I think that I love that question, especially in an age where we've all been encouraged to wear masks on top of our mask. What is our true face? But another version of the koan is, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Have you heard of that ever? What is the sound of one hand clapping? And that's the same question, really. What is, because we know what the sound of two hands clapping is, right? And here I am clapping my hands. You can hear that. So that represents the whole phenomenal world, everything that we can hear and see and touch and taste and smell and conceive of and think about. That's the sound of two hands clapping. But we want to know, in any spiritual tradition, Zen or Christianity or any, what is the sound of one hand clapping? What is the source of all this? What is this? What are we? What is the actual, what is the silence out of which everything emerges and to which everything returns, and which is really important to understand and to experience? I think that's the thing. And to dive into that. And I think when we do have that, be that questioning be present, then it gives us more compassion for others, because we begin to realize that we're very similar. We're expressions of something far greater. And instead of looking at all the differences, we begin to see the similarities, and we begin, hopefully, to refrain from violence towards other expressions of life. I think that's the key thing. Because when we harm other beings for our own good, we think, or because we're right and they're wrong, or however we want to look at it, we really lose track of everything, actually, I think. And so this questioning process, I think, is really very interesting to look into. So that's what I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to talk about that for a few minutes. Let's see, what do we got? So we have some time here. I'm wondering if anyone has a comment or a question about anything that's happened in the last month you'd like to bring up, or anything that's coming up right in this present moment. Feel free to do that. I see there's a couple of... nice. That's a nice comment by Fred. Funny how getting you to listen for the silence forces you to hear every note and every word, so you won't miss the silence. Right. Yeah, that's the thing. And we tend to miss it. I know I do all the time. Life gets so busy, and we get in such a hurry to get everything done. And then what happens out of that? So old Kusan Sanim, he emphasized spending lots of time. He would get up every morning. I mean, we get up at 2:45 in the morning and start meditating. At 3, we have to be there at 3. But the idea was, you just put first things first, and that's the most important thing, is to sit in silence and question, what is it that I am? And one of the things he would say, which I think is kind of interesting, because I think this is an important point too, is that the people who are doing that, like the monks, like he was speaking mainly to monks who have taken vows and who are devoted to attaining enlightenment for the benefit of all beings and are working on that. But, you know, we were sitting there and we were eating food that was donated by lay people, right? I mean, it was the lay people who, respected the fact that we were doing that, who made donations to the temple. You wouldn't have a temple system without people making donations to make it possible. And he said, if you don't really work, if you're not really taking this seriously and if you don't raise what he called the final resolve, the great resolve to attain enlightenment no matter what, to just care about the quality of your consciousness more than anything else, be ready to die if need be. If you don't, if you're just being comfortable and eating and sleeping and relaxing, then you in your next life will be born as a cow. And you'll live as a cow. And you will be also, and you will be exploited the way you're exploiting the lay people who are giving of their hard work and their money for you to meditate. So you better not fritter away your time, or you're going to be born as a cow in your next life. and I remember some of the monks were looking, and he's going to be a cow in his next life if he doesn't. So there's, this whole underlying understanding, which I think is critically important, that we have many lifetimes. I mean, we have many and many lifetimes, and whatever it is, who is this being that's having these lifetimes? Because that's another question. But to just get out of this very narrow-minded view that, like, this is all there is, this one life, and then there's nothing, or there's an infinite something. I mean, to kind of just open to the question, like, what is it? What is it that's making this possible? And see that for every cause that we sow, something is going to be reaped. And if it'll be reaped sooner or later. It may be beyond the horizon. See, we have this short horizon, and we have this little tiny view of a few years, and we think that's all there is. But very, very deeply evolved, highly evolved, and deeply wise people have been telling us a long time, no, no, no. I mean, this has been going on a long time, and it will continue. And as long as you're lost in illusion, it's going to continue. So we have all of our brothers and sisters, humans and animals. Of course, in the a lot of these ancient wisdom traditions, the idea is that we're all infinitely interconnected, and we've all been each other's mother at some point. You know, every being, every human being you ever meet, every animal you ever meet, at one point was your mother, and you were their mother. And so it's very important to cultivate a sense of gratitude and compassion for them, because without their love in that lifetime, you would have not been able to survive. So to try to, again, to get over, you can take that literally or take it metaphorically, but the idea is to get over this idea of letting an ideology that takes over our minds to judge and blame and criticize and fight against others, an ideology, or to exploit them. And these ideologies are really dangerous, I think. So the whole idea with meditation is to have a direct experience of our true nature, beyond ideologies, beyond belief systems, to really actually connect with what is our true nature. So that's not easy. That's the thing. It takes tremendous discipline and effort to just show up and keep and do that. But what's the alternative? You know, that's the question. You know, what's the alternative? The alternative is to avoid that, and then we're very often, I think, pray to those who are trying to dominate our mind. And there's a lot of that going on, to deceive us. So we have to really put up strong walls of protection for the integrity of our consciousness. And meditation is one of the good ways, but it doesn't guarantee it. Meditation really helps, but I think we have to combine meditation with what's called discriminating wisdom, discriminating awareness. Viveka is the Sanskrit word, viveka. It's the ability to look deeply through something, to see what's really there behind the mask. What's the real reality? You know, there's that great, I love that story. My new book, I tell this little that story, you've all heard it, of the person who's walking home at night, and suddenly they see a snake, and they're terrified. You know, it's like, oh no, there's this snake, and they're like frozen in terror. And their whole body is quivering and everything else. But then as they keep looking, they suddenly realize it's only a rope. It's a coil of rope. It's not a snake. Oh, wow, you know. So that's the thing. It's like we don't have to do all these complicated mantras and work really hard to turn the snake into a rope. It actually is only a rope from the very beginning. And we just didn't understand that from the whole time. So we think we have to somehow convert the snake into a rope. It's always been a rope. Everything's a rope. There is nothing. There's nothing that can damage us. I mean, everything we're afraid of. It's like we have to realize that most of the things that we're afraid of in the world that we think are snakes are just ropes. I mean, we're getting fear porn like gushing out at us from the media and from everywhere. Be afraid of this and that and the other. You know, all these snakes everywhere. You have to realize most of it is just rope. And ultimately it is just rope. I mean, for what we are, we're the eternal sky, and these clouds that come and go that we're supposed to be afraid of, they cannot harm us. So I think that's an important thing. But the other thing we have to be aware of, which I think is important to emphasize, is that there's a lot of situations, circumstances, and beings that are portraying themselves as ropes that are really snakes. So that's more on the relative level, but it's very important to be aware of that. That a lot of what we've been taught to trust and believe, like, oh, we need to have animal flesh to be healthy, you know, that's a snake that's pretending to be a rope. Oh, it's just, we're good, kind, loving people, we just like to have a burger. It doesn't hurt anybody. So we have to have discriminating awareness and be able to not only see ropes that are pretending to, I mean, ropes that are actually ropes that we think are snakes, and also snakes that we think are ropes that are actually snakes. And to understand that if we are not able to make those discriminations, then we actually begin to increase violence in the world. See, that's the thing. There's another great story. You know, this is I love this story. This is an old Japanese samurai story. And you've maybe seen it, and I think it was in they put it in one of the movies. I think one of the, like, Seven Samurai, that movie or whatever. But anyway, the old story goes that there was a father who had three sons. You know, an older, a middle, and a young son. And all three were training to be great samurais, great martial arts warriors. And so he decided he wanted to test them to see how they were doing in their training. So he hired a very accomplished martial arts assailant, you know, to stand hidden behind the door. And then he, one after the other, he called the three sons to him. He had someone go out and say, your father wants to see you. And so when the first son came walking through the door to see his father, the assailant knocked him down. Just like, you know, he didn't see him coming. He was hidden behind the door. The son walks in and, bang, gets hit on the head and gets knocked out, you know. So that was son number one. Same thing, so son number two is called. Son number two comes, walks through the door, and the assailant attacks him, But he is so fast. He's like lightning fast. He whirls and he blocks that attack and he throws the assailant against the wall. And the father's like, that's pretty impressive, you know. So, but then the oldest son is called and he walks up and he gets just to the door before he goes in the door and he stops and he says, Father, I have a feeling something's not quite right here. Like, what's going on? And so then the father has to admit that he hired an assailant behind the door to test him. So this is the thing. See, this is three levels of skillfulness, three levels of awareness. The one who is least aware creates the most violence. He just gets hit. It's like blood everywhere. Who knows what? The second one creates less violence. He's more aware. There's still some violence, but a lot less. He's not so gullible. He can see through things, and he's quick to respond, so he blocks it. But the oldest son who has the most training, he creates the least violence. He sees through the whole thing, and his intuition shines, and he knows, and so there's no violence. He actually tears the mask off the whole thing. He sees through the whole thing. See, that's the thing. We have to understand that very clearly. That our training in meditation and developing our intuition is the greatest gift we can give the world in terms of reducing violence, because then we are not going to be taken advantage of. We're not going to be contributing to the violence by allowing deceptive institutions and people to deceive and harm us. And we can stand back and we can ask questions and be an example. I think that's so cool. So, there's lots of things to think about, I think, during our time on this earth, during these crucial times, you know, these really critical times, and to really see the benefit of deep meditation as much as we can on a daily basis, I think a regular basis, to take time to be quiet and listen, and then also to really do the best we can to be savvy, be aware of what's actually happening in our lives and in our relationships and with people. And we'll make mistakes. I mean, we all will. You know, we'll be deceived by things, of course. But the idea is to realize that we have an obligation, really, to future generations, to others, not to be deceived by social customs, by official narratives, and by the desires that we have, you know, in our minds. I think one of the things I see really, and maybe you read that article I wrote a while back. It was called Greed and Pride, which are in many ways, I can't remember the exact title, but it was about the greed and the pride that in so many ways, the seven deadly sins, actually, those are two of them. There's five more. And how they're really celebrated. All seven of them are celebrated in our society. We think it's great to be proud. It's really wonderful to, what's in that second one? See, there's pride, and then there's, I think greed is number two. And, you know, the greediest people have the most wealth, and they're the ones we look up to the most, right? That we want to have money like they do. And, lust is another one. We just kind of celebrate lust, like, people who love food and love sex and love all these things. Like, that's some kind of a great, virtue, you know, and we identify that way. Like, who do we like to have sex with and what we like to eat, you know, what we crave, what we desire. Like, we don't realize that that is one of the worst traps you can ever have. It's turning beings into things. I mean, ask cows how they like the fact that we're proud that we're humans and superior to them, or how they feel about the fact that we're greedy and want to eat a lot, or how they feel about the fact that we lust and we love to eat, burgers and steaks and things. I mean, all these things, they really cause terrible violence, and they really drive us to see other beings as objects to be used sexually or violently or exploited. Sloth is another one. we celebrate sloth in our society. I mean, it's like science. We love science. Why do we love science? Because it makes everything comfortable. You know, it's like the greatest thing. We have more time to relax. We can set a thermostat, and it only goes 1 degree warmer, 1 degree colder, never anything else. I mean, it's the greatest thing. You know? I mean, everything in our society, you know, just celebrates and tries to encourage all of these things. Anger, another one. It's like we're righteously angry. Oh, I was offended by that person when they said that, and I have a right. And we the media and our institutions, all seven of these, they're continually promoting and justifying our cultivating these things. You know, so we have to understand that if we're going to be free and happy, that we are called to take responsibility for the quality of our life and our consciousness, and not allow ourselves to be programmed by these really toxic narratives that are pervasive, that are trying to enslave humanity. There's a great saying from China, which is, if you're willing to do what is hard, your life will be easy. If you're only willing to do what is easy, your life will be hard. And I think, you know, there's so much truth to that. If we are willing to do what is hard, yeah, it's just the greatest thing. You know, I mean, we actually can find openings and develop capacities and be a light in the darkness. If we want to have an easy life, that's a good way to have a really hard life and not question the narratives and go along to get along and all these kind of things that we're encouraged to do. So, I don't know. I'm kind of wanted to say those things, I guess. I think there's a lot to be said for going against the current of our society and really exploring the ancient wisdom traditions. You know, find an ancient wisdom tradition that appeals to you. I think there was a lot more wisdom before technology came along. You know, technology has really dumbed us down tremendously. So I think it's good to go back a few thousand years and read what people were saying back then. You know, like we were reading from the Dhammapada, the Buddhist tradition, the ancient Hindu traditions, the ancient Christian, Islamic, whatever, you know, Judaic. Taoist, Confucian, there's such incredible wisdom. These people, they were like way ahead of us. And we need to remember this ancient wisdom and then really act on what they did. They made the efforts, a lot of them. I mean, when I read some of these ancient texts, I'm amazed at how evolved these people were to develop these systems of understanding and healing and spiritual awakening. They weren't perfect, of course. They didn't have, you know, some of the things we have. But I think if you go back far back in history, maybe way back before animal agriculture, I think our history's been taken away from us in many ways. I mean, how could they get us to sit in cubicles staring into computer screens if we knew that in the past people had lots of time and they hung out and they worked and they created communities and villages and they were happy without slaving away the way we most people do today in meaningless jobs. So I think perhaps there was a past that was really beautiful that human beings did have, and that we're the solution to our problems is not more technology, it's more spirituality. It's getting back to the spiritual foundations of our consciousness. And if we want to have technology, you know, that's maybe okay. But I love what Mahatma Gandhi emphasized. He emphasized appropriate technology, which is basically things you know how to fix, right? If you can fix it. I don't know how to fix a cell phone or even a ballpoint pen. You know, I think, you know, getting, I think really, I think growing food and finding ways to live more simply. I think I'm probably a Luddite at heart. I don't like, in many ways, a lot of the technological advances because they've really separated us so much from nature. And I think whatever we can do to help reconnect ourselves with nature is going to be something that'll help us a lot in our daily lives. So thank you all for listening. I'll check here. Some good comments, I guess. I don't know if they're good, but they're. Thank you for making your comments. And we have about just a few minutes left, 3 or 4 minutes. Does anyone have anything you want to add or a question? If you do, at any time you can go down to the reactions. I guess you know that and raise your hand if you'd like to say something. Otherwise, I think I'll call Madeline in and we can begin to wrap up our time together. I really want to thank all of you for the efforts you're making to bring compassion to animals and each other and to question the official narratives and bring healing, really healing into our society so that we're deepening our understanding of our true nature. And here she is. Here's Madeline.
Hello. Hello, Madeline.
All right. I'm all so blessed to have this wonderful person right here. So, we're happy to, I just want to give a little news also. So we have our third Thursday as usual in 2 weeks from today. And then we're leaving on Saturday, in November 4th. And we'll be giving lectures in Reno and Moab, Salt Lake City, and Denver and a few other places, Boulder around there, and then Kansas City. Judy Carman's there here in Lawrence, and then going across to St. Louis, and then Ohio, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus, and then down to Washington D.C. And all around the South down there, I guess Wilmington, a whole bunch of places, Charleston and Myrtle Beach and other places, and then down to Florida. So if you're anywhere along the way, on the way back in March, we'll be coming through Texas and Arizona and back to California in early April. So it's a 5 months living on the road in our little micro van, and we're getting it ready. I just added a second battery about a couple hours ago. So now instead of 100 amp hours, we have 200 amp hours, one under each seat. We realize that comes in handy. So anyway, it's a combination of juggling and meditating, I guess we do here. But anyway, so let's close and thanks again for joining us. And we'll go ahead with our, if you don't mind unmuting yourselves, and we can say our circle of compassion prayer that we say together three times. Let's do that together. Here we go. Compassion circles the earth. We're all beings
everywhere.
Okay, Michael. Compassion circles the earth, all beings everywhere. That's good. We're getting in right in harmony here. Okay, one more time. I'm feeling.
Compassion circles the earth, all beings everywhere.
All right. Much love to you all. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye, everyone. Thank you.